Welcome to the keynote stage. So my name is Mark Walsh. I'm the founder of this conference and part of the leadership team with Daniela and Manel. We have got quite a feast, quite a treat in store for you. The main stage doesn't have all the top names on. Some of them are spread out for various logistical reasons, but there are some awesome presenters on this stage. This stage is also sponsored by Alain Stefani. When we first had the idea of getting sponsors, I basically said, I won't take anyone as a sponsor unless I love what they do, because otherwise it doesn't have any integrity for me. I didn't know who Alain Stefani was, but I met her in Berlin. Someone said, oh, she's an intimacy teacher, she's an ex-sex worker, best-selling author in Germany. And I said, okay, well, I'll meet her. And I met her. And as soon as I met her, I felt at ease. I felt like, wow, this is a person who's playful, but also a deep listener. This is a woman who's a real leader. Since I've seen her work with people in very, you know, around trauma, around intimacy, around very difficult areas, men and women, I've come to regard her as a friend, actually. Like, I love her. So go to her website and check it out. It's Alain, I-L-A-N, Stefani, S-T-E-P-H-A-N for November, I. AlainStefani.com. There's an offer there called Love and Rage, which is as juicy as it sounds. You'll also find links in the descriptions for the videos below.
All right, welcome back. And with me here today is Terry Patton. And Terry Patton is a very interesting person. He wrote a lot of book and even more book chapters. One of his books is Integral Life Practice. The newest one is New Republic of the Heart, an Ethos for Revolutionaries. But Terry is also an activist. He's a philosopher, social entrepreneur, consultant, and coach. And today with us, he is touching base on living the question, ceremony, surrender, grief, and gratitude. And I'm incredibly blessed to have Terry with me here. Terry, welcome.
Thanks so much, Daniela. And hi, thank you for being here with me. As we begin this hour together, I want to invite us to make a transition from our busy lives and the distractions. Maybe you've been multitasking. Most of us do a good deal of the time. And I want to invite you right here, right now, and to put your hand on your heart, as we have been taught to do by my friends at HeartMath, and just breathe to and from your heart. And allow yourself to re-experience your own heart's essential well-being, as distracting, as confusing, as frightening, as out of control as life can get. The heart keeps pumping, pa-bum, 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 pa-bum. It might speed up and slow down, but it's always letting us know that things continue, that things in a way are okay. So please close your eyes and let yourself make a decision in your own heart to be here and now fully, to let every cell in the body know as you breathe to your heart and from your heart. Let that pulse of heart wisdom touch every cell, every shred of your being. And surrender into what is, which reminds us, that this life is a school. We're always in class. We're always potentially learning. And that learning is a sacred matter. So I want to invite you to open your eyes and bring your attention to me, and let's, with every cell in our bodies, open your hands, open your belly. If the way you're seated, and you can put your feet squarely on the on the ground. Feel your body as a circuit connecting earth and heaven, opening the top of your head to the light above as you let your energy sink into the earth, completing that circuit between earth and heaven. And turn to your own true self, to the prior unity that is the whole cosmos and is manifesting as you and your breathing and your heartbeat. And turn to that one who is paradoxically your true self and also your most intimate, divine, beloved, your sacred, most intimate friend. You who are beating each of these hearts, you who are breathing these bodies, you who are the energy and consciousness that are being all things. You are bright, amazing, good, and true, and beautiful, and free, and joyful, and love itself. You are beyond my words or my ideas of you. You are here. We are your body here now. You are remembering yourself, noticing yourself through these hearts, these hands, these feet, these eyes, these ears. And you are celebrating yourself. And you are feeling everything there is to feel. You are opening to all that is hurtful and painful, all the tears, all the suffering of all the people and all the animals, all the non-human beings in this world and every world. And simultaneously, you are blissful. You do not hide away in some separated equanimity. You are all feeling, all tears, all grief, all gratitude, all wonder. Awaken us into these bodies, these feeling, breathing bodies. Conscious bodies. Awaken us, trillions of conscious cells, all the electric aliveness of these bodies. Every one of us erotic, sexy, every one of us free of any need to go there or anywhere in particular. So this transition into sacred space, we're making it. We're arriving more and more and more and more into the presence of the living God in the form of whatever is in front of you. Not just the computer, but for me, the trees through my windows, the rest of the room. And the life force is moving from the heart to the whole body, from the top of the head down the front, through the heart, through the belly, through the genitals, up the perineum, up the spine. Every one of us is a living circuitry, electric and erotic and also a student of how we can be love in action, a student of how we can be of benefit. Our world is both marvelous and terrible. We're in a critical moment. In some sense, every one of us is getting an initiation. And it takes the form of a whole series of impossible questions. How can we, who are humans in a human civilizational system that is totally unsustainable, how can we be the turn toward something that can sustain with the whole body of life? How can we do that? In some sense, it is as if we are all the problem. How can we come into integrity with future generations? How can, here in the United States, we must heal the wounds and traumas of all of the Black, Indigenous, people of color, all of that. And the only sustainable way we can do that is to heal what we here call the red-blue divide, this bitter polarization between Democrats and Republicans. How can we heal both these things at once? That's a deep question. How can I show up right now, conscious, tender, vulnerable, willing to learn, as a force that makes a difference? How can you, hearing me, rest more and more deeply into these poignant, amazing, sacred questions? We tend to hear a question and think that it needs an answer, like when we were in school. We want to get a good grade on the test, we come up with the answer. But if you want to attend to the test of the school of life, you must listen to the question until it reveals the deeper question underneath and the deeper question underneath that. You must let the question summon you forward in ceremonial, sacred space, into the presence of something that is whole bodily, not just mental. This is why Rilke, in his letters to his young poet friend, Franz Kappas, wrote, "You must live the questions, you must love the question." That's the task of the poet, that's what he was saying. But every one of us had better be a poet in this time. This is not a time to phone it in. This is a time to show up. And yet we don't altogether know how. There's a deep, deep question that we tend not to be fully present to. Even those of us, here I am asking all these questions, I need to be reminded. Every one of us needs to be participating in an ongoing, vulnerable, alive way in this. Be in the sacred presence of the consciousness that can be with this mysterious, miraculous, amazing mystery that is evolving. It's calling forth newness. So let us do a little ceremony. I was lucky enough to have a friend who's a shaman who makes drums, and he helped me make this drum. So let me drum you into. Presence to the sacred mystery where we are meeting. So thank you, Daniela. I feel like I've set the space now so that we can just enter into contact with what is, each other, the mystery, the radiance, the horror, all of it. So let's talk. What is arising for you? Does someone hear from this deep, deep silence, letting it touch you in some new place, some new tender part of your feeling, being? Does something arise to be said?
A lot of things. there is a lot of sadness and fear arising, actually, on touching certain parts of what is happening. And something which came up when you set up the space is the place where the world is right now. And that there is a very substantial shift happening. And from my perspective, and I'm neither an expert nor am I a philosopher, it just feels like there's like, we keep on going as if things are normal, but they are not.
Yeah.
And we do ignore the emotions and the feelings which are coming up from that.
Yes. Well, thank you for naming this. A lot of my work centers around having the courage to face what feels too much to face. Not defending the heart. Letting the grieving and the tears break us out of a brittle abstraction into contact with all that is here. We are, you know, I have many, many people with whom I'm in conversation, and many of them have a great deal of knowledge beyond mine. And on the basis of that knowledge, some of them have much different expectations for our future than others. But many very intelligent and deep human beings are saying now that we may be present in the midst of an impending collapse. This is a message that many of us are hearing and not knowing how to process. It'll mean our death. It might mean the death of our children. It might mean the death of the dreams, you know. And we want to find a way to see in it a blessing so that something better can come out of this. And we don't trust the darkness because we can see that it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, and my negative expectations become a negative prayer, and I don't want to do that. But then my positive expectations, they're partly my wish fulfillment. They're partly my own projection because I'm afraid. And we are with a question that is, we weren't built for. This is exceeding us. So we need to become deeply present with one another, with everyone. And we've got to forgive ourselves. I was raised to be a Western consumer, a part of this whole system that I now see is killing the earth. And I'm attempting to make some better choices. And everything I've been given, all of the wisdom traditions of mankind in conversation with each other, all of that's come out of the blossoming of the 60s, which I was around for, you know, the sexual revolution, all of these ways that we've become more alive, you know, learning from the Buddhists and, you know, the Tibetans say, or also the Taoists, learning from indigenous sources. Here we are. We're the heirs to everything. We can look back 14 billion years. We look forward. We might be looking into, who knows, perhaps beyond human life, human extinction. And maybe we turn some crazy corner and we go on to evolve for a million years into wonders we can't even imagine. But we kind of have to make peace with the worst case. The worst case is that we see a lot of death and we have to do a lot of cleaning up after it. We see a lot of tears, we see a lot of suffering, and we have to just go through some hell as a part of our allotted peace. And we are scared that we will be degraded by it, that we'll run, that we won't be living our values. And we pray for the strength to show up as love, full, 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 full. And we know we won't do it perfectly. Everybody who has ever lived has died. Every ecosystem from the history of the planet that has ever lived has died. And maybe this living process we are a part of will also have its death. Well, inevitably it will. The sun will supernova eventually. So everything is mortal, even our context. And we only get to be here, smaller than that vastness, and somehow expressing something of the qualities of divinity while we are here. You who are the source of everything, please give me the strength to be radiant, compassionate, grounded, vulnerable, tender, to receive another. Thank you, Daniel.
You're welcome. It's beautiful and poetic how you express that.
For me, a huge, huge teaching has been that the awakening is not about avoiding bad feeling, but allowing all feeling. And there's a lot to feel, more than we can feel. We are able to live into the question. What is the question? How to be true? How not to avoid death, even as we affirm life, how to embrace it all, how to let go of all the heaviness and laugh. But to respect the grieving, the anticipatory grieving. For me, this confrontation with our unsustainability has occasioned a whole series of dark nights of the soul, dark journeys to the underworld. And thank God I've been given enough spiritual initiation that I find my way through each of these cycles into the presence of the holy. Dear Lord, I surrender, knees and forehead on the earth. Okay, we're in the question.
You're talking a lot about the impermanence. I believe in Buddhism, it's anicca, and the grief which is connected to that, and still the joy of the change. And something, a question which just recently came up in a conversation with a friend is like, maybe what's happening in the world is not necessarily death, but it's a new beginning. It's what needs to happen in order to awake. Said awakening is not, it's not something which is like always beautiful and easy, but it's facing all the deep unprocessed emotions and feeling where it can get really, really messy. So I'm curious about your thoughts around that.
Well, you know, Daniela, this has been for me, my personal history is that I was raised in an intentional community founded by one of the peace churches in America, sort of in the civil rights and peace movements back very early days in the 1950s and early 60s. And I became an activist, and I was working on anti-apartheid and civil rights and peace and war in Vietnam and draft and all that. And then kind of had a realization that I couldn't bring something better unless my consciousness was repatterned. And so I found my way to the human potential movement and then to the ashram of my root guru, where I spent the first half of my adult life. But of course, at a certain point, I realized even that repatterning of myself, even at a very fundamental level, which I was graced to encounter, it still asked me to be a force for outer change, you know, that the inner work needed to become outer work. And my discovery is that it needs to become interpersonal work. That our intimacy with each other is one of the leading edges of what's possible. So after I left the ashram, I more or less began to try to write the book, A New Republic of the Heart, that's over my left shoulder here. You can kind of see it. And I wrote that book, and I kind of came to a place where I was feeling like, there's so many books in the world. Do I need to write another book? Well, you know, I think that I have a really worthwhile book in me. I am going to try to write it. But I was holding a very high standard. So I wrote that book and I threw it away. I actually showed it to Ken Wilber. He invited me in to help create Integral Life Practice. I taught that for 15 years, but I threw that draft away. I wrote another draft, I threw that away. I wrote another draft, I threw that away, because I wanted the book to be a transformational experience that did face this, all of this, this enormity, in a way that didn't avoid it. And I felt like all the good work was really getting some facet of this multi-dimensional gem, this reality that has so many facets. They got a bottom line or a couple of bottom lines right, but everything was bigger and more multidimensional. I felt finally that in this book I was able to capture enough of it that there was a transmission of a different possibility. And since then I've been really working with a social experiment. I invite people not to be my students anymore, but to be adventurers with me in being the change we want to see, we need to see in the world. And so that's like a profound question that we try to inhabit together. And that has been going on for some time. There's actually a new book called Being the Change that's sort of the reports of our research findings that just came out a few months ago. And that's, I think that PDF of that is the gift that I sent you. But what, John Lennon has a sweet line that, you know, life is what happens while you're busy making plans. And while we're confronting this enormity, we are living, you know, pandemic or no, here, out here, fires and smoke, or no, whatever the crisis is, every single moment is precious. And so there's a kind of humility, I don't know. I'm feeling like I can grant another my attention, become really curious, not just about my experience of you or your experience of me, but of the we, this other presence that's here between our eyes. And the we can grow and blossom and become sacredly, potently amazing. And we can learn to cultivate that. So I've held this question for a long time, and I continue to hold it very intently. And I will at times offer partial answers to the question because, of course, I've thought about it a lot. But I would rather honor it by not offering the partial answers because it's never exhausted. We're learning to live, and learning to live is learning to die. And learning to die is learning to hold another in their dying. But first it's learning to hold another in our living, and how we can celebrate and grieve and open in wonder.
Yeah, rather sitting with a question instead of trying to answer it.
So I would love to invite some conversation about this. Having said that we don't answer questions, I would love for somebody to ask one. So I wanna open it up and create a chance for us to interact a little bit. If there are some people here who would just like that.
If people have questions or would like to enter the conversations, you can do this on different levels. You can either raise your hand and we can bring you into the main room. Please be aware that you're then on video or at least on audio. You can also type into the question and answer box and we can read the question out. And so far, I do see a little bit of reflections, like Lisa's writing, fear and anxiety to go deeper, to be open. Mm. Another reflection comes from Frank. It is difficult to let go of attachment. Oh, yeah. And Haya has her hand open. So I can bring Haya into the main room, if that is okay for you, Terry. Okay, Haya. Hello, Haya.
Hi. I just have a question. How does one develop sense of gratitude? Because it's difficult for me, and I need to develop it.
I'm wondering if you are you pretty sure you'll have a place to sleep tonight?
Yes.
I'm glad. And probably enough to eat.
Yes.
The next day. You know, there's something about just appreciating the most ordinary things. Can you take a deep breath right now? No, just appreciating. Don't worry about gratitude. Gratitude is like when it really opens up. But just the littlest bit of appreciation for whatever blessings there are in your experience and in your life. Appreciating yourself for being interested in growing in gratitude. That's an honorable question. I appreciate you asking. Can you appreciate your own sincere desire to grow?
Yes. But yeah. I'm asking about gratitude because it's important. They say it offers a good psychological well-being. And always complaining, always. Always not happy with life. Not happy.
I think that we live in a world that often gives us reason to be complaining.
But, yes.
But there's a choice, you know, the glass is both half full and half empty, like this glass. It's half full and half empty. So you might do some simple practices that are commonly done for this purpose. For instance, you could begin to write a gratitude journal to just really notice anything. If you have an interaction in the street with somebody who is helpful or pleasant, if you have good tasting food, if you have a chance to feel the wind, the warmth of the sun, the simplest things, the qualities of color, and just draw your attention to them. And maybe for 3 weeks, it's a long commitment, 21 days, if at the end of the day or the beginning of the day or at a special time in the day when you have a few moments, you just take some time to notice what you can appreciate. And just let yourself take it in, like breathing to and from your heart. Take in the goodness of whatever there is that you can appreciate. And keep doing this discipline of writing and noticing what there is to appreciate, so that you stop only looking at the glass half empty and can notice the water that is also in your glass.
Thank you, Haya.
Yes, great. I want to give chances for other people.
Yeah, but because we're very grateful for your question, Haya.
Thank you. It's important. Yes. Okay.
So there's a nice question in the question and answer box, which quite a few people liked, so would like to pass this on to you. So Nubuntu is asking, how do you keep an expansive heart living under injustice?
There's no formula. It's hard. It's important to know something about life. Life is, it's not fair, and it's an ordeal. The word ordeal is sometimes used like when they scourged Jesus, you know, and he was just suffering terribly over a period of time. But an ordeal is also when there's an initiation and you are the young boys who are going to become men or have to be alone in the wild for a while. That's an ordeal. Life itself is a bit of an ordeal. Nobody gets through this life without loss and pain and frustration. And even the blessings, even the wonderful things that we have, they come and then they go, and we have to let them go. You fall in love and then the honeymoon is over. You have an amazing trip and then you're in shutdown for pandemic, you know, whatever it is, whatever is good ends, whatever is bad comes and goes. And this, we have all these images of in the advertisements, like life is supposed to fulfill you. As a separate person, it's not about your fulfillment. You're going to have an ordeal no matter what. So if you are suffering real specific injustice, and it's important that you honor the anger and the no to the injustice, and maybe be an activist and do something to change the injustice, and maybe that is yours to do, it's important that you not let that consume you so that you become bitter. So what is it to be in this ordeal of life and still appreciate the, you know, literally, there is no pleasure greater than taking a breath, just breathing. You can spend $1,000 on the most fabulous meal in the most fabulous restaurant, and all of those amazing flavors that are extraordinary, all they will be is a version of what you could enjoy with every breath. So there's an acceptance of the ordeal and the fact that there isn't full justice that can coincide, not with you becoming passively accepting of things that you should say no to, no, but you actively reawakening to the divine, radiant, transcendental, conscious mystery of being who is here in every moment. Just a little. Keep practicing it like we might practice gratitude and keeping a gratitude journal. Keep letting yourself give your heart to the giver, the great giver, again and again.
Yeah, it sounds a lot like it's not an either or, it's a both. It's a both of, it's going, like things are fading away and still, you keep on saying we're still alive. We are alive in every moment. So it's not an either or, it's having both, balancing. Reminds me a lot of the serenity prayer, actually.
Yes, and yet there's this both and, it's about paradox. Everything is paradoxical. This whole amazing journey that we are all on as humans, conscious beings, in this beautiful broken world, it's when you get in touch with how wonderful it can be and you have your enlightened heart opening awakening, you're going to want to go into a spiritual bypass and just not be related to all the loss and pain. And when the loss and the pain is really impinging on you especially strongly, that will tend to want to become your whole world and you'll lose touch with the goodness. And what it is to be present in this turgid intensity of being, which is the human experience, it's to be alive to paradox. It's to let the heart constantly be stretched to a deeper opening. So I really respect that question. Injustice is a huge topic we could talk about for hours, but I think you were asking a more personal question. And I hope I answered it in a way that you can relate to.
So if I'm looking at the question and answer box, there's a lot of people sharing around grief, lost loved ones. And one question which came up from Jessica is, she's writing, I would love to hear more about surrender. The relinquishing of ego I find so hard. How do you feel safe in surrender?
Well, if you know, I don't want to surrender to somebody I don't trust. I don't want to surrender. I don't want to surrender to Donald Trump. Okay? I want to surrender to God. And do I feel safe in surrendering to God? We have to establish more and more safety through being our own friend. A big piece of restoring a basic psychological health in a point where we're depleted comes from becoming your own friend. You are always with you. In your mind, in your daily experience, you come back to the qualities you bring forward. So you need to grant yourself some compassion and some forgiveness and not just judge yourself. You have to begin to become a friend to yourself in this intrapsychic relationship of you with you. It's a you and you game, and it begins by you forgiving you, becoming kind to you, and helping you thrive. So once that begins to come, there's a kind of safety because you have become your own friend. There's a safety in that. And in that, then, you begin to notice all the little ways you're holding on. You can't surrender all of them perfectly the first time, but you can do some surrendering. And you will feel a fresh, clean energy come in to replace what you have given up. And in the giving up, you make room for grace to come through. And there is grace. There is grace even in the dying process. There is grace in pain. I have not suffered as much as many people, but I've studied it. I had two crowns done with no anesthetic. I studied what it was to be in that particular pain. And it's just a very, 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 very intense tickle. The most searing pain, even the pain that kills you. I've been thinking about it because where I live, it's not impossible that I might be burned alive by a fire, by a wildfire. And I may not be able to do it, but I do pray that however it is that I die, whether I'm choking for breath or burned alive, no matter how grotesque it is, that I find in it an opportunity to just let go into God, just let go into the light, just be grateful that I have been touched by God and let myself go to God in that spirit. So surrender is the way that you can it is so profound. Really, I don't want to put words around the whole thing. In a way, surrender is like a question, another deep, deep matter that we best hold and be schooled by.
Yeah. Wow. it's kind of going into almost without words, simply feeling.
Yeah.
I would like to have ask another question, which came from Rick and which might help a little bit to wrap up the depth of the talk. And Rick is asking, I do want to step up in an empowered way and contribute to the change. But I feel dragged down with feelings of not being enough, not capable, or I'd rather hide. Any advice on how to navigate those feelings and step up every day just a bit more?
Well, I really honor that question. I feel close to you when I hear you asking that question. You're a sister, I think it was a woman, right? To me in that inquiry. I feel it's my question too. I ask those questions all the time. What I'm doing with my work is I'm gathering people together And we are attempting to learn better how to befriend one another in the inner work and the interpersonal work, and to do outer work so that we can make as big a difference as we can. We need a whole systems transformation, and yet we're living in an old and unsustainable one. There is no simple and direct thing that you can do that addresses the holistic. It's like a Gordian knot. The tangle of karmas are seemingly overwhelming. But it asks for you to stand in place, love as best you can, help in the ways you can, be a student of how that can deepen. Forgive yourself for the fact that at times you are unsatisfied by all that. Find friends who are in these questions too. Befriend them. Try to bless them. Try to make them stronger and clearer. Do everything you can to be a true friend to the others who are with you in the inquiry. Help us all become stronger and clearer.
That's really nice. Yeah, also what you said, that you don't take any students, but you are explorers, you explore together. The community piece is sounds for me, it's a very important part of this kind of journey in changing the world.
Yeah.
Every day a little bit more.
Very much.
We have 3 minutes, and there's the last question I would like to pass on, which kind of also touches base on that. It's from Maurice, and she's asking, as an activist and a philosopher, how do we bridge theory and practice, allowing us to go through this current transition from books to the we in the embodied consciousness?
Many, many good people are working on this question the best they can, all over the world in different ways. It's important to be able to appreciate that no matter what everybody is doing, it has a truth in it. And it's probably not the whole answer. And your awareness that this good thing doesn't meet some other need, maybe it helps you sense, well, there's somebody somewhere else I need to be. This book, Being the Change, I mentioned, you know, this social experiment, it was published just a few months ago, and we are offering a PDF of it to you if you want. And it shows you some of what we are doing, and I hope that you find that it offers some specific practices that you can do with friends if there are people who you are holding these questions with. And certainly there is an invitation, get on our mailing list. We will open the doors to the social experiment again, probably soon after the new year. I would like to offer even more responses to that question, but I know we're out of time. But I think that the vitality of the question is partly its own answer. The fact that you're holding the question in a sincere way is the practice to some real degree.
And that brings us actually back where we started, in not trying to answer questions, but being okay with letting them sink deeper and facing whatever they bring up.
Yeah.
I think that's a great place to end or to wrap up the conversation. I know there's a lot of things we could still talk about, and I would love to talk, but part of me also feels like talking is, it can bring the conversation further, but sometimes silence and reflection is more needed.
Yeah.
And personally, I'm at that point, there's a lot to chew and a lot to sit with for me now. And I don't know how it is for participants, but that's what I'm taking out of the session. So, if you want to find out more about Terry, Terry already posted the website of his book, New Republic of the Heart. There's also another website, terrypatton.com. Anything else where people can find you or something about you, Terry?
You know, I have a regular podcast called State of Emergence. And if you go to stateofemergence.org, you'll see the recent episodes. And if you have a podcast player, you can search for State of Emergence or Terry Patton, and you can participate and, you know, listen in on some of the questions I ask of some of the deeper souls that I'm able to ask these questions of.
All right, thank you. As I said before, often it is important to keep the conversation going, and that can be for yourself, but that can be also with peers, with people who bring in different perspectives. And there are two ways how you can do this within and after the conference. We do have the coffee breaks, and they sound very mundane, but the conversations there can go deep. And the coffee breaks from the last conference, I created actually long-lasting friendships with like-minded people. So do check them out and take the chance to reflect, because reflection is part of the learning process. Of course, you can also go into the Facebook group and continue the conversation there. I just posted the link. And also, please consider to support the conference. This conference is not free to set up, but it is free to attend. At least for 48 hours, you have access to all the talks for free and to a lot of deep wisdom, like we just experienced. However, if you have the chance to buy the recordings, it gives you time to digest, to experience the talks you want at your own pace and take the time to reflect after. It also supports us to actually make this happen, and it supports the people who genuinely can't afford to buy the recordings to make this kind of learning and working accessible for free for those. So please do consider to support us with your purchase and have access to that for a lifetime. Terry, I want to give you the last word of the session. And I'm wondering, what is in one sentence or less, like we're putting this all together in a book in the end, what would you like people to take away, or what's your top tip on doing the work, being embodied?
Well, I invite you to trust your life process, even your losses and grief and dying, and to attend the school of life that is stretching every one of us to be deeper and clearer and more conscious and true and beautiful. So trust and learn and grow.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Terry. It was a huge pleasure. I'm going to digest now. People also send you a lot of love, move to tears, and wishing you a wonderful day. Really looking forward to your new endeavors, and we will be in touch. Thank you so much.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right. Thank you for everyone who came here. I'm leaving it a few moments open to allow people to send their gratitude.